Chapter 10. The Fear of UFOs. The fourth reason why UFOs are clearly demonic in origin is because they instill emotion like demons. Let's see what happens when demons appear on the scene according to the Bible.
Mark 1:21-27. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching, because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then a man in their synagogue, who was possessed by an evil spirit, cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," said Jesus sternly. "Come out of him." The evil spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him."
Mark 9:17-27. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "O unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So, they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for him who believes." Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe, help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up.
Okay, now that'll creep you out. And that's precisely the point. How many of you would say, according to the Bible, that when a demon is on the scene, it instills some serious pain, torment, and fear, etc.? Okay, just a little. And not just the person being possessed and set free by Jesus of the pain and torment, but imagine being one of those people who were there witnessing one of those encounters. That would be some serious fear, right? Well, wonder of wonders, one constant theme of the UFO entities is that they too instill massive fear and utter terror when they show up on the scene. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to those who say they've had encounters with them.
Witty Strieber is the author of the best-selling books Communion and Transformation about UFO encounters. Here is how he calls his own personal encounter. "I became entirely given over to extreme dread. The fear was so powerful that it seemed to make my personality completely evaporate. Witty ceased to exist. What was left was a body and a state of raw fear so great that it swept about me like a thick, suffocating curtain, turning paralysis into a condition that seemed close to death. I died, and a wild animal appeared in my place. They had changed me, done something to me. I wondered if there was any relationship between my experience and the mystic walk of the shaman, or the night ride of the witch. The visitors persisted in my mind like glowing coals. Whatever this was, it had been involved with me for years. I felt their presence. It was palpable. Most upsetting, I could smell them.
Increasingly, I felt as if I were entering a struggle that might even be more than life or death. It might be a struggle for my soul, my essence, or whatever part of me might have reference to the eternal.
There are worse things than death, I suspected.
So far, the word demon had never been spoken among the scientists and doctors who were working with me.
Alone at night, I worried about the legendary cunning of demons.
At the very least, I was going stark, raving mad.
I felt an absolutely indescribable sense of menace.
It was hell on earth to be there in the presence of the entities, and yet I couldn't move, couldn't cry out, couldn't get away. Whatever was there seemed monstrously ugly, so filthy and dark and sinister. Of course, they were demons and I couldn't get away.
Elaine Morganelli, a guest at an LA meeting, came up with a simple, yet chilling answer, as to why these entities would do this to people.
People can be duped by devils. A demonic spirit can tell you anything. They love to fool you.
These people, the UFO abductees, are being taken over.
The more you go along with it, the harder it is to get away from it.
But to what purpose?
I think they're being used to get an anti-Christian movement going.
What got me was when he, Whitley, referred to the Lord and his angel as the Nazis of the air.
Stuart Goldman, newspaper writer we saw earlier, and who has also talked with Whitley Strieber on several occasions, says, one could write Morganelli off as some sort of Christian fanatic. However, she's not the only one who's come to the conclusion that Strieber's visitors, and in turn the beings who are abducting countless thousands of people, are nothing more than good old-fashioned demons, doing what they do best, stealing souls.
Is this evidence starting to add up or what? But that's still not all. Another characteristic of demonic appearances is that when people do have encounter with UFOs, they often end up doing one of three things. Number one, go deeper into the occult / New Age, i.e. they are led further away from God, and Jesus, and the Bible. Number two, go insane or literally become demonically possessed, exactly like what happened to this man.
On the evening of October 25, 1973, a young Pennsylvania farmer, Stephen Polanski, and 15 other witnesses saw a bright object hovering over a field. Stephen grabbed his rifle and went to investigate. It was then he noticed something walking along by the fence. They were hairy and long-armed with greenish-yellow eyes, and they smelled like burning rubber was present. Stephen sensed that these creatures were not friendly and fired a tracer bullet over their heads. When they kept on coming, he fired directly at one of them. Then all the creatures disappeared into the woods and the glowing object disappeared from the field instantaneously. UFO researchers as well as a state trooper were called in to investigate. When they arrived, the people there told them that Stephen had been growling like an animal, flailing his arms, his own dog running towards him, and Stephen attacked the dog. Stephen then collapsed and after a while began to come to his senses. The entire group commented on the nauseating sulfur-like odor that was present.
Now, speaking of strange smells and specifically the smell of sulfur, not only did we see that same strange odor presence earlier in the history of UFO, but it's also quite common in both demon and alien encounters.
The Amityville Horror was based on a factual account of what happened to a family in Amityville, New York. An irritating and nauseating odor seemed to accompany the presence of the ghost or spirit entity that entered from time to time. Whitley Strieber wrote of his abduction experience in his book Communion. He said he could smell their presence. That it smelled like sulfur.
Now here's the point. Little do most people realize that sulfur just happens to be the smell to describe the lake of fire.
Revelation 19:20. But the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who had performed the miraculous signs on his behalf. With these signs he had deluded those who had received the mark of the beast and worshipped his image. The two of them were thrown alive into the fiery lake of burning sulfur. Revelation 20:10. And the devil, who deceived them, was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Revelation 21:8. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters and all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death.
Not copper, not cheeseburgers, not stale milk, but of all things for aliens to smell like when they appear on the scene is sulfur, the very stench of hell, demons, and the lake of fire. I don't think that's by chance. But that's not all. The third characteristic of demonic appearances is that when people have encounters with UFOs, they not only. Number 1. Go deeper into the occult / New Age, i.e. further away from God. Number 2. Go insane or become demonically possessed like this man did, but they also. Number 3. Go commit suicide. They kill themselves. And remember, that's exactly what demons do. Their leader Satan is a murderer, as we saw, and has been one from the beginning. However, sometimes, and this is the tricky part, UFOs will appear on the scene with a different kind of emotion. They can also appear on the scene with a sense of euphoria. And this is important because some people who have encounters with UFOs and aliens will invariably say something like the following.
Oh, don't tell me these aliens were demons. I experienced nothing but beauty and light. I felt so much love emanating from them. It was totally pleasant and absolutely wonderful. They can't be demons. That's crazy.
Not so. The Bible says angels, which demons are, only the fallen kind, can play good cop, bad cop and deceive you.
2 Corinthians 11:13-15. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising, then, if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve.
And believe it or not, these guys that I'm about to share with you found out the hard way, just how deceptive these beings can be, including going to the extreme of playing this good cop, bad cop on you, masquerading as an angel of light.
Mike Mundell is a Canadian entertainer and lecturer. For many years, he was involved in various aspects of the occult, including mediumship. Dozens of entities would speak through him on an ongoing basis. I became involved in what is now called channeling in the late 1960s. It was a spontaneous experience. We had been trying astral travel and a group of other techniques to let our spirits leave our bodies to develop clairvoyant abilities and so on. When I say we, I mean a small group that had polarized together around an occult worldview. By trying these different techniques, I inadvertently opened myself up and various entities began speaking through me. Initially speaking in my head and eventually taking over to such a degree they were using my vocal cords, speaking through me to my friends. Steve Warr, former occultist, Mike could literally be talking to you like I am now and instantly in a moment change, be taken over, and someone else would be talking. His voice would literally stop being Mike and then be somebody else. Mike Mundell, initially it seemed like it took quite a bit of effort to take control of me. And it was more or less a voluntary thing. But as time passed it was getting much, much easier for them to slip in and out. We used to call it popping in. We used to say, oh, so-and-so just popped in. And then they would be gone. Sometimes they would be around for hours and others for just a few minutes. Then we eventually realized that they were able to go in and out as they pleased by the end of things. We asked one of the entities, why is it you can go in and out of Mike's personality so readily? And they said something to the effect of all human beings have a door that will keep other spirit beings out, and, in most people's cases the door is locked, barred and stapled, shut, rope shut and sealed, and that in my case it was virtually off the hinges. Steve Warr, they claim to be distinctive entities. In other words, if they had a name, they would say their name, if they had a purpose they would tell you that in many cases. But the range would range from very low-level life forms that didn't really have any purpose except to be pranksters, that sort of thing, up to the human range, up to the ascended masters, the wise, benevolent, powerful type entities and the antithesis of that, evil, powerful, intelligent, entities as well. Mike Mundell, they claim to be ascended masters, highly advanced spirit beings from other planets, people from various astral planes, reincarnated and then gone on to perfection, Tibetan Buddhists, people from the past. I mean there was an entire realm they called themselves, but the common thread was that they were all spiritually pure and were contacting our little group specifically to help us evolve spiritually. Warr often experienced strange occurrences. He feared the darker controlling entities, one of whom regularly threatened him with knives. Still he was fascinated with the spirit's powers. Steve Warr, one evening when I was over at Mike's place we were just sitting talking when all of a sudden one of the entities popped in and became visibly angry with primarily myself. He began ranting and raving, I can't remember the exact words he was saying, but he sort of stormed off and went into the kitchen. My habit was to always follow Mike into the kitchen where there were knives present. So, I just followed, but I was very concerned with what was going on. As I got to the doorway of the kitchen, Mike was standing, and he picked up two Coke bottles off the counter, two 26 ounces Coke bottles, and held them both out in front of him and crushed them both simultaneously, one in each hand. Then unfortunately, the entity left, and Mike was not able to come back right away, and in that delayed time Mike fell forward into the broken glass, cutting his hands. I don't know if they were cut then or if they were cut when he broke the bottles, but they were cut very badly. He was obviously in shock when he came back. I got him up and moved him to the couch in the living room, and again he was taken over by a different entity that seemed much gentler and more benevolent and held out his hands in a very almost pathetic sort of way. Do the wounds on my hands look familiar to you? Now we had an entity who was claiming to be or imitating Christ. Mike Mundell, one of the things the entities used to do was they used to test us. It was as though we were being brainwashed. We would be told to do something very bizarre immediately. Or we would be told to go at midnight to a certain forest that was very, very terrifying to us, because there had been a number of manifestations there. We would be told to go alone at midnight, stay there for an hour, and then come home. They were testing our readiness to respond immediately to their commands, and we were not to test them ever. Because they said proof comes to those who do not ask for it. Which sounds vaguely biblical, but it isn't. I recall one time one of the entities was put to the test. One of the particular people in the group suddenly spoke to it in German, and the entity, without missing a beat, stopped its sentence with the other person, turned and addressed that person in fluent German, and then turned back and continued the conversation. None of us knew German, none of us had studied it at any time, but the entity was able to switch in and out of the other language immediately. Emanuel Swedenborg spent an entire lifetime associating with the spirit world, yet he warned, when spirits begin to speak with a man, he ought to beware that he believes nothing whatever from them, for they say almost anything. Things are fabricated by them, and they lie. They would tell so many lies and indeed with solemn affirmation that a man would be astonished. If a man listens and believes, they press on and deceive and seduce in many ways. Mike Mundell, they claim to be ascended masters, but in reality, they were the exact opposite, end of the spiritual scale. There is no question in my mind now that they were demon spirits. If you would have asked me then, I would have believed entirely that they were higher beings, a higher spiritual order of beings. I wouldn't have believed in demons. I didn't believe they existed. I thought they were an invention of the Christian church. In retrospect now, I can see back with horrible clarity that they were malevolent, created, demonic, spirits intent on our destruction. Some of these entities out here will say, oh yeah, there are bad spirits, and there are good spirits. In fact, the old mediums before the channelers came along, it was a little more complicated. The mediums would have a control, it's called a control spirit, and the function of the control spirit was to keep the bad spirits away. To kind of line things up to make it work out as it should. And they would even say, oh, that was just a lower entity. Mike Mundell, in my own case, I recall that some of the entities that we had to deal with were overtly violent, almost psychotic, and the others were pure and altruistic, and all they wanted to do was help us, and they would warn us about things that the nasty entities were doing, and they would give us teachings and methods of developing ourselves and so on. But in retrospect, I'd like to say all the entities were equally evil. It was the clever way it was presented by showing this group as overtly evil made us readier to accept these guys as the good guys. In reality, they were all in it together. Whatever they say they are, Jesus Christ, Buddha, your Aunt Vera, whoever, they are not your true altruistic beautiful beings that they claim to be. If you strip away the covering, you will find a demon behind every one of these voices, behind every one of the spirits. In fact, one of their most clever ploys is what the Bible says. Even Satan disguises as a spirit of light. We are seeing these emissaries of evil that are dressing in the most wonderful packaging, so people are accepting them as genuine. People are seeing them as good and pure, and in reality, even the good ones are demon spirits.
Sounds to me like demons are so sneaky that they can bait you into darkness by first appearing as an angel of light. Then their true colors eventually come out. Where have I heard that before? Speaking of their ability to masquerade and morph into different shapes, here's what one researcher said about this deceptive characteristic of UFOs.
John Ankerberg, around the globe there are tens of thousands of reported UFO entity cases, thousands involving human abduction reports. These entities range in size from just a few inches to almost 20 feet, but usually between 4 and 7 feet. They appear in forms that are human or humanoid, robot or animal-like, bizarre or ghostly. Sometimes these entities exhibit deliberate hostility toward humans, which has resulted in physical or psychological harm, and even possession by the entity. Most of the time they feign an aloofness toward man, or in contactee cases a genuine concern. Sometimes, just like UFOs, these beings appear independently in three-dimensional space and time, while at other times they exist only in the experience of the observer. The morphology or form of the UFO occupants suggests ties to the Earth, not outer space. Classification of the entities correspond broadly to creatures of historic folklore, mythology, demonology, and occultism in a wide variety of times and cultures. The fact that the UFO entities fit historic patterns of previously existing morphological types from many occultic traditions argues for their being indigenous to this planet. Both Lawson and Valley have done interesting and important work in this field. It is significant that Lawson himself observes, "The devil is a polymorph and so can mimic any form imaginable or change his size at will."
That's exactly what these UFO entities do, and that's why many UFO researchers just flat out call them for what they are. They too believe they are demonic. But don't take my word for it. Let's take a look at their quotes.
Dr. Jacques Vallée, "We are dealing with a yet unrecognized level of consciousness, independent of man, but closely linked to the Earth. I do not believe anymore that UFOs are simply the spacecraft of some race of extraterrestrial visitors. This notion is too simplistic to explain their appearance, the frequency of their manifestations through recorded history, and the structure of the information exchanged with them during contact." An impressive parallel can be made between UFO occupants and the popular conceptions of demons. UFOs can project images or fabricated scenes designed to change our belief systems. Human belief is being controlled and conditioned, man's concepts are being rearranged, and we may be headed toward a massive change of human attitudes toward paranormal abilities and extraterrestrial life. I.e. they're deceiving us. The medical examination to which abductees are said to be subjected, often accompanied by sadistic manipulation, is reminiscent of the medieval tales of encounters with demons. The symbolic display seen by the abductees is identical to the type of initiations ritual or astral voyage that is embedded in the occult traditions of every culture. Thus, the structure of abduction stories is identical to that of occult initiation rituals. Lynn Catto, UFO researcher, "A large part of the available UFO literature is closely linked with mysticism and the metaphysical. It deals with subjects like mental telepathy, automatic writing and invisible entities, as well as phenomena like poltergeist or ghost manifestations and possession. Many of the UFO reports now being published in the popular press recount alleged incidents that are strikingly similar to demonic possession and psychic phenomena." Dr. Pierre Guérin, an eminent scientist associated with the French National Council for Scientific Research, "UFO behavior is more akin to magic than to physics as we know it. The modern UFOnauts and the demons of past days are probably identical. What is quite certain is that the phenomenon is active here on our planet, and active here as master. I.e. they're controlling things." John A. Keel, one of the most informed persons in the world on UFOs, author of the now classic UFOs, Operation Trojan Horse, "The manifestations and occurrences described in this imposing literature on demonology are similar, if not entirely identical, to the UFO phenomenon itself. The UFO manifestations seem to be, by and large, merely minor variations of the age-old demonological phenomenon." Ivar McKay, former chairman of respected British UFO Research Association, "If one sets the three occult groups against the three classifications of UFO entities and their characteristics, it is rather surprising how complementary to each other they appear to be, not only through their appearance, activities, and level of behavior, but also in the quality of mental and especially emotional reaction and response that has been noted to have occurred on contact." Trevor James, a veteran UFO researcher, "A working knowledge of occult science is indispensable to UFO investigation." Sociologists Stupple and McNeese stated, "Studies of flying saucer cults repeatedly show that they are part of a larger occult social world." John Keel, "UFOs Operation Trojan Horse," and Dr. Jacques Vallée, "Messengers of Deception, both believe that the UFO entities are deliberately programming their human observers with false information in order to hide their true nature and purpose. Dr. Valley has actually addressed the UN on UFOs and was the model for Lacombe and Seven Spielberg's film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He has spent decades in serious UFO research, and like veteran UFO researcher John Keel, he has put his intellectual finger on the lowest common denominator of UFO contacts, deception, and also on the most common parallel to UFO phenomena, paganism and demonology. Valley also reveals that the UFO beings of today belong to the same class of manifestation as the occult entities that were described in centuries past, i.e. demons. John Ankerberg. No one can deny that even many non-Christian researchers have concluded that the UFO phenomenon is an occult one. If it can be established that the world of the occult is the masterpiece of the biblical Satan and his demons, then it is logical to conclude that UFOs constitute a demonic phenomenon with a hidden agenda. After 20 years, the extent and depth of our research now constitutes for us a conclusion that has become a virtual certainty that UFOs constitute a spiritistic, demonic phenomenon. We believe that such a conclusion may affect us all.
Now, lest you think these demonic entities really don't have an evil murderous agenda when one makes the mistake of cohabitating and intermingling with them, let us now observe the unfortunate fate of the man who uncovered their deceptive deeds as we saw earlier. Apparently, they didn't like what Joe exposed.
Joe Fisher, 53, author of The Siren Call of Hungry Ghosts, died on Wednesday, May 9, 2001. By jumping off a limestone cliff at Alora Gorge, near his hometown of Fergus, Ontario, Canada. Troubled by personal problems, as well as by the spirits he claimed to have angered in writing The Siren Call of Hungry Ghosts appeared to have pushed him over the edge. That he would do so is all the more surprising considering what he had written earlier in The Case for Reincarnation, as much as the suicidal personality feels able to escape the world by getting rid of the body. Reincarnation's revolving door ensures that all hope of escape is short-lived.
Those who learn that they have killed themselves in past lives are quickly brought to the realization that suicide, far from being an answer to life's problems, is, instead, the violent breaking of the lifeline.
If the suicide could only realize the resulting intensification of difficulty which must enter the life to come, suicide would never be attempted. Joe Fisher was an investigative writer specializing in metaphysical topics. His books had sold more than 1 million copies in 22 languages. He was born and educated in England and held dual citizenship with Canada, his home base since 1971. He regularly gave workshops and seminars based on his explorations into the supernatural. A veteran broadcaster who gave more than 200 radio and television interviews on his work, Fisher started his career as a junior reporter on the Staffordshire Advertiser, where he became, at 22 years of age, the youngest news editor in England. After emigrating to Canada, he worked as an investigative reporter and feature writer for both the Toronto Sun and the Toronto Star. His journalistic stints were interspersed with excursions to Greece, Ireland, Ecuador, Morocco and Peru, where he pursued personal writing projects. At Ecuador's Colegio Americano in Quito, he taught English and composed journals which were later edited for the book Cotopaxi Visions, Travels in Ecuador. In 1981, Joe Fisher left daily journalism to concentrate on writing books and freelance articles. Since then, he has traveled widely, Australia and Antarctica are recent destinations, and contributed to periodicals ranging from Canada's National Dailies, the National Post and the Globe and Mail, to magazines including Outpost, Equinox, Ocean Drive and Life and Soul. Joe Fisher's books included the contemporary metaphysical classics The Siren Call of Hungry Ghosts, Life Between Life, The Case for Reincarnation, and Predictions. While His Holiness the Dalai Lama wrote the preface to The Case for Reincarnation, film rights to Hungry Ghosts have been optioned to a Los Angeles film company which is moving towards production. For 5 years, Fisher painstakingly investigated the claims of channelers and the mysterious voices that speak through them. The Siren Call of Hungry Ghosts, his last book, is his gripping journey into a realm of darkness and deception. The revised edition includes a new foreword by Colin Wilson, and an epilogue that updates events since the book was first published in the UK a decade ago. In 1987, Fisher was presented with the Leask Award by the Spiritual Science Institute of Canada for making an outstanding contribution to the field of spiritual awareness. Many in the publishing community, as well as friends of Fisher's, are expressing shock at his death. A Fergus area friend, writer Sheila O'Hearn, said, "He believed in giving of himself for other people.
He felt, for him, that's what life was all about."
Her husband, Ray Krasinovsky, remarked, "He's going to be really missed.
He was my only real friend here. I'm going to miss him."
In one of his last communications with his editor-in-chief, Patrick Wieg at Paraview Books, Fisher noted that the spirits were still after him for having written his final book.
"Fisher's family have decided there will be no services."
So sad. What a deadly deception going on here. It looks like these entities weren't too pleased with what Joe was exposing, so they decided to take him out. Why? Because that's what demons do: they lie, they instill fear, and they kill if they need to. Wonder of wonders, this is the same track record we see with UFOs and aliens.